Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Nonprofit U, a forum where nonprofit stakeholders can share lessons learned and discuss the latest developments in the industry. My name is Valerie Leninger Holt. I'm a consultant to nonprofits, and I specialize in community and organizational development. I work with nonprofit organizations to help them make a stronger impact to their clients and communities. You can find Nonprofit U on Facebook and Twitter, and I encourage you to comment early and often using the hashtags Nonprofit U, Settling for Misconduct, or the Chicago Reporter. You can also leave comments on blogtalkradio.com/nonprofit_U. You'll find a link to open the account to a chat room on the episode page, and you can also email me questions at consulting@valerieflinnett.com or send messages through Facebook and Twitter. You'll find the Nonprofit U fan page on Facebook, and the Twitter account is @NonprofitU. We'll be taking questions by phone and from our chat room at about the 20-minute mark. The call-in number is 347-884-8121. Again, that number is 347-884-8121. Today's episode is Settling for Misconduct. The Chicago Reporter has created an interactive database to analyze police misconduct cases at length, and the database provides policymakers, activists, and journalists with the information they need to make inferences and inform recommendations. We'll talk about the database and how activists, policymakers, and journalists can use it to make informed recommendations, but most importantly, how they can take those data and take action. Again, we encourage you to call in with questions at the 20-minute mark. The call-in number is 347-884-8121. Nonprofit professionals and community activists are especially encouraged to call in and share your war stories and strategies. Our guest for today is Susan Smith Richardson. Susan is the editor and publisher of the Chicago Reporter, a nonprofit investigative news organization that focuses on race and poverty. She's been a metro editor at the Chicago Tribune, the Sacramento Bee, and the Austin American Statesman, where she was also a member of the editorial board and an award-winning metro columnist. Susan left journalism briefly to work at the MacArthur Foundation and to teach journalism and direct the Human Rights Archival Project at the University of Texas Law School. In 2002, she was a Nieman Fellow, and she's also a graduate of Harvard Kennedy School of Government, where she studied housing, poverty, and how truth and reconciliation commissions can help address longstanding issues of racial injustice in the United States. Very impressive background, Susan, and I thank you so much for being on the show. It's indeed an honor to have you. But before we get started, can you tell us a little bit about the Chicago Reporter and how you came to work with them?
Oh, I'm happy to. And thank you for inviting me, Valerie. It's a pleasure to be here. So the Chicago Reporter is a nonprofit investigative news organization. We are completely online. We were founded in 1972 by John McDermott, who worked closely with Dr. King when he came here to Chicago to work on what became known as the Chicago Freedom Movement. So after that time passed and we moved into the 70s, Mr. McDermott wanted to make sure that there was a way to continue to measure Chicago's progress toward racial equality. He didn't want to give up on the ideals and goals of Dr. King and the Civil Rights Movement. So he suggested that a new publication be started. It was called the Chicago Reporter. So our goal in 1972 was to measure the city's progress toward racial equality, and now, you know, 45 years later, that is still our goal. We're housed at the Community Renewal Society, which is a faith-based organization here in Chicago.
Wow, awesome. That's a very ambitious mission, and I tell you, it's very much needed.
Well, we were created with the mission. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes, and I thank God for it. And I, for one, you know, I'm really happy that Chicago Reporter developed the Police Misconduct Database Can you share with our listening audience the story behind its creation?
I'm happy to. So first, I want to encourage everybody listening to go to the website, and it's very simple to remember, chicagoreporter.com/settlements, chicagoreporter.com/settlements. So here was the idea, Valerie. Remember where we were right after Ferguson in 2014? You had Ferguson, then you had a wave of police misconduct cases and African-American men being shot that seemed to be in the news back to back to back. Around that time, we were looking and thinking, how can we contribute to, you know, getting at the truth, getting an important conversation going as journalists? What could we do? So we had here in Chicago our own cases. But in many people were already looking at police-involved shootings and looking at complaints to the police department here in Chicago and whether those complaints went anywhere and officers were disciplined. But then I thought, what's one of the missing pieces in this conversation? So we went back to a story that we wrote in 2012 that looked at a handful of police officers who had had multiple lawsuits against them in which the city paid out to, you know, a victim or a plaintiff, but yet those folks are still on the force. Some are names we would recognize today, like Commander Glenn Evans. So I looked at that and I thought, the city has paid a lot of money in some of these cases. It's not an admission of guilt to pay the money, but there is a question of how much money the city is paying for allegations of misconduct. So we thought that's a missing piece of the conversation that's going on now. Let's actually sit down and look at so many years' worth of these settlements and figure out how much the city is paying and what the pattern is, how many officers are involved. Are they happening largely in Black and Latino communities? What's the typical amount of the settlement? So we did that, and as we started working on it, was around the same time that the video was released of the shooting of Laquan McDonald. And so it really pushed us to understand the urgency of finishing this and getting this information together. And so in June of this year, we launched the database.
And I'm so glad you did. I want to remind our listening audience that you're listening to Nonprofit You, and we're speaking with Susan Smith Richardson, the editor and publisher of the Chicago Reporter. We'll be taking questions at about the 20-minute mark. The call-in number is 347-884-8121. Okay, so Susan, who is the database meant to serve, and what are some of the features?
Well, I love what you said at the beginning when you were introducing the database, Valerie. You talk about community groups, lawyers, policy advocates. I like to say it's for everybody because I think different groups will find different uses. I thought about my neighbors who I actually asked about the database, people who have been stopped by police officers before, whether you filed a lawsuit or not. So everyone from someone who's been stopped to someone who is actively, as you said earlier, organizing around changing police practices, lawyers who would want to know the backgrounds of various officers so they could prepare their own cases on behalf of clients. And, you know, and a group that I rarely talk about, but I think it's so important, city officials. You know, this data comes from the city of Chicago's law department. The law department has that information. We got the information. All we had to do, really, and this is why, you know, everyday folks could not per se do this, but we got it from the law department. What we had to do was just match the names of the lawsuits with the police officers, because that was the part of the information that was not given out. So we have the dollar amounts, the name of the plaintiffs, the name of the law firms. So what we needed to do then was do a second step, which was pull the court records so we could attach the names of the police officers with the cases. And once we did that, we had a match of the police officers, the dollar amount, the lawsuit, and the plaintiff. And then the last step, we, got a list of police department employees to make sure that the names of the defendants match the police department records. So we kind of went through a process. But my point of saying that is this. I say city officials, budget people, aldermen, are also an audience for this. Because the city may have the data, but it doesn't mean that they're taking that data and using it to track behavior or track dollar amounts. So I hope, too, that city officials will see how we've taken their information and put it in a format that is transparent and there for anyone who wants to have knowledge to act on.
Okay, well, you just gave me an idea. I'm going to send all of our aldermen a link to this podcast when we're done. So I can at least do my part, and I'm sure you're going to continue to do your part to reach out to them, you know, for, you know, in the future.
Yeah, and I think it's really important. So let me talk a little bit about some of the features, if I can.
Okay.
So
okay.
For folks who I know that aren't looking at it right now, but we thought it was important to give people a way to search it in ways that were useful. So, for example, you could search by a police officer's name or his or her badge number. You can look up the lawsuits by neighborhood. So, you know, I live in Woodlawn. If you live in Woodlawn, you could pull up Woodlawn and get all of the lawsuits that occurred there. You could look it up by payout amount. So was it $5 million or the median average, which is $36,000? You could pull up the information based on the type of misconduct. Was it illegal search and seizure? Was that the allegation? Or was the allegation excessive force? Was it false arrest? And those are some of the ways that you could search the information. Most people I've found when we show it really want to know, what does it look like on a neighborhood level? How many of these cases actually came out of my neighborhood?
Wow. That is pretty powerful stuff. Pretty powerful stuff. And what are some of the sources of your data beyond, you know, the police department and the law department? You know, what are the sources that you use to actually put locations?
Well, first we had to look at the actual complaints, which are the filings, the legal documents that the people who are filing the civil rights lawsuit against the police officers must produce in terms of court records. So we looked at that to get the address of the incident. Once you get the address of the incident, because we didn't always have, and we in many cases people did not say, I'm Latino, I'm African American, I'm Muslim, I'm, you know, however we could identify groups. But so what we did was by having the address, which is a part of the court record, we were able then to map the addresses on the website so you could actually see the parts of town. And that was important for us because absent having in all cases the race, ethnicity, or even the sexual orientation of the people who filed the suits, we needed a way to kind of determine was there a racial breakdown here. And when we looked at the data using just geocoding and showing where it was on a map, we found out indeed that 56% of these lawsuits stem from neighborhoods that were predominantly African American. And you know what's surprising, or for some, maybe not all of us, is that 56% of these cases came from predominantly black areas, but you know, 38% of, we're talking about 38% of the population is African American. So you see that black people are disproportionately represented in these numbers. And actually it's 38% of areas in the city are predominantly African American. So you've got 50% of the cases coming from there, and these communities are 38%, which, you know, once again just shows who is most affected by these allegations of misconduct. So we used a lot of different pieces, but the lawsuits were really important for all sorts of data, including location. Sometimes the race of the person would be stated because, you know, the person said, yes, this happened to me because, you know, I'm an African-American male or an African-American female. And then we used just different coding services as well as mapping services to be able to represent that on a map and give people a sense of the geography of what was happening.
Yeah, I love this. You know, I love the intersection of data and people. You know, what I love about this database is not just numbers, it's not just maps, but it's also people. So, I know you just recently created the database, but are you seeing any short-term outcomes, and what are some of the things that you hope people will eventually get, you know, as a result of creating this database?
Well, we're really happy that, because, you know, we created this because we want people to use it. As journalists, we feel it's, you know, our public service to provide people with critical information. And so they could take the knowledge that comes from, I hope, using this and studying it to decide what action they want to take. We do know that across the country, policing is the issue of the day. And the more information, the more data, the more facts that are on the table, you know, the more people can affect policy changes that are going to be meaningful and, you know, I would hope long-lasting. So we just do our part as journalists to really just expose injustice. But so in a concrete way, though, here's what's happened. Since we launched the database the last week of June, we have just seen, the more we get out and promote it and talk to community groups, the number of people looking at it growing. So now we have a little more than 75,000 page views.
Wow.
You know, which has grown dramatically since the launch. You know, at the end of the summer. So that's really been encouraging because we see people coming back to it, and we also see a lot of new people coming to it. In the past month alone, we had, and that was a month in which we really did heavy promotions, talking to community groups, we got an increase of about 8,000 page views. So we know that it's getting out there, and we're taking it out there to the community. Now, some of the impacts, I think what we're seeing is that our big hope was to start a conversation about the connection between police accountability and fiscal accountability. No one was really looking at what's the connection between these settlements, which, once again, as I said, to be fair and accurate with the city, a settlement doesn't mean the city admitted guilt, but they're still paying the money. So the connection between these payments and whether or not someone saying, hey, let's look at this money and then let's look at the police conduct here, should this money kind of send a message to us that we might need to look at our disciplinary and police practices. And we weren't seeing a connection between the two. So for us, it was really important to make that connection between the money and the police misconduct, and really for two reasons. One, because all taxpayers in the city are affected by this. It doesn't matter if you consider yourself someone who is very, very supportive of police, or you consider yourself someone who's a big critic. At the end of the day, what we have in common is the fiscal impact, the money. Mm-hmm. And then the second point was to just change the conversation. We know policing historically, and rightfully so, has been a conversation often about race because of who was disproportionately affected by misconduct. But we also thought it was important to recognize that, but then say, wait a minute. Is there a way to also push out a broader conversation about the money and get people who may be less concerned about the police but are really concerned about watchdog money issues to also get in this game as well and begin to push for reforms? So to us, it was important to bring together the money and the police patterns and practices, and we thought this was really something unique that the database could do. So I realized I didn't say two things that I want to say so your listeners know. We were looking at cases between 2012 and 2015. The total amount of money paid by the city was $210 million in settlement. That doesn't include the $57 million or $53 million that they paid for outside attorneys to help settle the cases. And we're talking about a total of 655 lawsuits. So $210 million is, to anybody, even Oprah, I think, or Bill Gates, that's probably a lot. And when we think about it, for city services, and that's a lot of money. And the last piece I think that's important to understand about the money part, Valerie, is this.
Mm-hmm.
So the city does have a budget for these cases, the police department does. And then if they exhaust their money, which they have for the last few years, the money for lawsuits, then there's a larger city fund that, you know, pays for all sorts of things. It could be a tree fell on your head or a garbage truck got you. You know, the city, of course, has potential liability in many areas. But what happens is if the police department runs out of the money and the city doesn't have the money, then what will happen is you'll end up having issuing bonds. And just an example from our story by our reporter, Jonah Newman, in 2014, for example, the city had $450 million in bonds. $198 million of that was for 2 years of settlements and judgments. And that's overall settlements and judgments, but a significant portion of that was for police cases. So you really see it's not just the money this year, it's also the interest that gets attached to bonds. So this is an expensive proposition and an issue that we felt strongly the public needed to know about and understand.
And it's interesting the point you make about bonds. You know, bonds can have maturities, 20, 30 years. So something
down
that,
the road. Mm-hmm.
That, you're right, something that happens today, taxpayers are paying for it, you know, 20, 30 years down the road.
That's so right. That's, I was telling, I was, oh, it's incredible. I was talking to some high school students a couple of weeks ago, and I was saying, you'll be my age and still paying for it. So there you have it. It will follow you.
Yes. We've reached the 20-minute mark. I want to remind our listening audience that you're listening to Nonprofit You, and we're speaking with Susan Smith Richardson. She's the editor and publisher of the Chicago Reporter. We'll now take questions. The call-in number is 347-884-8121. Again, that number is area code 347-884-8121. And while we're waiting for callers, you know, I can, you know, continue with our conversation. I noted that your database was funded through philanthropy. How did you go about making the case to convince funders, you know, to support the creation of the database? And then what were some of the things that they were looking for that made the project interesting to them?
We were funded by the Open Society Foundations, you know, which is a large global foundation based in New York. They are our sole funder for this project, and we're really grateful to get their support. I think the reason we received the funding was first and foremost because, you know, we're in this incredible period with policing issues now. And we were when I first approached OSF, which was at the end of 2015. You know, mm-hmm. all of these issues were happening. We'd come through Ferguson. We'd seen Rekia Boyd case. All these mm-hmm. issues were just snowballing nationally. And we had an idea that attempted to kind of look at things a bit differently, attaching the money to the police practices. And, you know, for them, and a lot of foundations, in fact, who are increasingly interested in how do we kind of get at the truth of what's happening with some of these policing conflicts, they were very, you know, they were eager to fund projects. So I don't want to sound like it was easy, but I think what we had the momentum with this. Things were exploding in the country. And two, our idea was a different take. This idea of how much money is actually being spent to settle cases. One newspaper had created a database, the Baltimore Sun, but unlike mm-hmm. what we did, they did not have they didn't summarize the complaints, which are basically the person's narrative of what happened to them. So we had that human element, which I think mattered. We had that hard data showing here's how much money. And then we also had an idea that in the long term, we really wanted to make it a policy issue about budgets. And I think those three things, which were different, really appeal to Open Society Foundation. And the final thing was just having something permanent that people could go back to time and time again to understand and keep up to date. So the last piece of it, really, I think that was important, they wanted to know, too, that we were going to be updating it regularly, which we are.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So what are some of the lessons that you've learned in creating the database?
Oh, I think the biggest one is, you know, if you want, you know, people to use it, you really got to think like the user first and foremost. Not that we didn't, but it's a little bit different. You know, you're looking at this data for, took us 6 months, and so you're not always looking at it in the same way that, you know, someone in the public is going to look at it. So one of the big takeaways, though, is to really, you know, we have this data, but if it's not packaged in a way that is easy and immediately useful to people, they can't use that knowledge. So for us, it was a big, I think we did a lot of things right in that, but one of the things when you come back and talk to people later, you realize most people probably would value this information if it were organized along neighborhood, but also by police district. So you could say, if I live in this police district, I can use this on a police district level and go to my district commander. Things like that, I think, were things that we've kind of learned after the fact. But one of the biggest takeaways, just in something that moved us and that really got us as journalists, was this. We write a lot about, in our industry, the big cases, $5 million, $10 million. Well, we don't have $10 million, usually $5 or $6 million. But most of these cases are not ever going to get covered by news organizations because they're considered, you know, too small, $36,000, $10,000, $5,000. But when you add all of these cases up, you realize how steady and daily these police misconduct cases are in communities of color. And that's a very different story than the $5 million cases. And it really shows how steady and daily this negative interaction is. And for us, that was a really sobering moment. What can we as journalists do to better capture how it's happening on a daily level, not the big cases that, you know, happen a couple of times a year, which is, that's important. But it's also important to remember that it's the small daily activities, too, that really have communities thinking, you know, this is why we don't trust police. And we need to have a better way of covering those stories.
And I think you've done an excellent. Well, we've come to the end of our show, and I'd like to thank Susan Smith Richardson, editor and publisher of the Chicago Reporter, for being my guest today. Susan, would you care to share any parting thoughts and tell us how we can reach you?
Well, just thank you for having me on the show again, Valerie. And I just want to encourage everyone to go to chicagoreporter.com. That's where you can look at all of our news stories, not just what we've written about the police cases. But if you go to chicagoreporter.com, you can also see a link to our police misconduct settlements database, and you can go to our staff page, and you can find my email. And I will so look forward to hearing from you about all sorts of story ideas. And I guess the last thing I just want to say is that as journalists, we, and especially in this post-election period, it's so critical to help the public distinguish between facts and fiction, because now we're at a time of what everyone calls fake news. So at The Reporter, we really take our job seriously, and we really hope that people will see us as an important and a valuable source of real news, if I have to call it that, and follow us at chicagoreporter.com.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you for listening to Nonprofit U Blog Radio Talk Show today. The show will be available for download within about an hour, and be sure to tune in next week for yet another engaging discussion. Till then, take care. Thank you so much, Susan, and I am looking forward to, you know, keeping in touch with you and hearing more about the project as it develops.
Thank you so much, Valerie.
All right. Take care. Right. Bye-bye.
Bye.